You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swabey. Listen to conversations with award-winning filmmakers, directors from the golden age of television, and creatives from the indie film community who continue to inspire the next generation of filmmakers. And now, over to your host, Damian Swabey.
Everyone remembers Daphne Maxwell Reed as an iconic TV mum of the 1990s from her three seasons as Aunt Vivian on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And Daphne couldn't be more excited when the cast of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunited 30 years later for an unscripted reunion special that aired on HBO Max last November. These days, Reed is a Renaissance woman, respected artist and designer, and education activist. Working from her home in Virginia and still happily married to pioneering television actor, producer, writer, director, Tim Reed. Breaking new barriers is nothing new to Reed, who decades ago became the first African-American homecoming queen at Northeastern University. And shortly after that, she became the first African-American woman to appear on the cover of Glamour magazine. She keeps busy as a spokesperson for Virginia State University, a historically black college, doing outreach, public relations, and speaking engagements that allow her to preach the importance of education and career prep for students of color. A thoughtful, inspiring, and fascinating professional with over five decades of experience, Daphne Reed demonstrates that mastering a new skill is always possible for an artist with a generous spirit and self-determination.
Hi, Daphne. How are you today?
I'm very well today. How are you, Damian?
I'm doing good. I've had a great day and now I'm here with you and we're about to do this podcast, so I'm happy.
Excellent.
Excellent stuff indeed. So I've been watching your work for so many years now. It's an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, and I've luckily found out a lot about your creative spirit and your creative journey, because I thought you were an actress who done loads of great television stuff. You've made clothes. You're an awesome chef. I wish you were here some days when I feel like waffles. I know you can really make those. And photography as well, amongst other things. So you started your creative journey at how old would you say?
I think out of the womb I started creating. I mean, creating trouble to start with, I'm sure. But my mother said I was always doing things my own way since I was a little girl. And I just enjoy making, creating.
Good. And what were the first type of things you were creating? And did you have creatives in your home that would have helped nurture and influence you as a creative?
Yes, my mother was a creative. She was a seamstress and a great cook and an all-around great gal. My dad took photos of us and was an amateur photographer. But I was born and raised in New York City, where inspiration is all around you. So I started making things when I could make my hands move. We make things from straws. We make things from toothpicks. We make things. I was surrounded by people who could take a pecan and make a mouse out of it. I mean, those kinds of things. I was always inspired by what my cousin could do, who lived with us. And she was quite the creative, and she taught me how to knit and crochet. And she used to make little stuffed toys. Anything with hands I could do. We made three-dimensional stars out of straws. Everything was creative.
Excellent. And New York, I've been there before. I see what you mean. It's an amazing place. And I can see how creative juices can get flowing in such a huge, brilliant city. But what part of New York did you grow up in?
In Manhattan, right on the west side, right across the street from where they built Lincoln Center.
Manhattan, I like Manhattan. And was there a school there you would go to help develop your creative
I went to lots of different schools. No, and it wasn't for creative. It was for the mental education stuff. It was, I was a good student. I was smart. And okay. I used that as well as my creative. And I guess that made me an all-around person.
And what did you excel at in terms of being smart? Are we talking about maths or science or geography? What was your go-to?
Probably all of it. I attended the Bronx High School of Science, which was one of the top high schools in the country back then. And I loved biology and geometry. And I finally realized that geometry has a lot to do with art and nature. And I liked drafting, which we did by hand. And I just did anything that was put in front of me.
Excellent.
Except algebra.
Except algebra. A bit boring.
I see no need for algebra.
I'm with you on that one, that's for sure. Your training as an actress, did you go to drama school or anything along those lines now?
No, I didn't train as an actress. I went to workshops on Saturdays. It was a fun thing to do in high school. And worked with some wonderful, wonderful people. So I guess I got it by osmosis. My mother claims that I started performing when I was about 3 years old, but I started performing when I was in high school or in junior high, I guess. And it was just a lark. It was nothing that I was looking toward making a career out of, because I could not see how a Black woman could make a living doing that. So I didn't pursue that as a career option.
So when you went to these workshops, what were the type of things you learned and enjoyed being there?
We were doing improvisation and we were making things up. We were learning movement. We were learning about different playwrights who were kind of blooming at the time. Black theater. Douglas Turner Ward was writing wonderful plays. We were doing scenes from different plays. And I was working with professional artists who did theater and did film and taught us a lot.
When did it get to the point when you thought to yourself, I actually can make a career out of this?
When somebody hired me to do it. And that was many years later. I had graduated from college. I had had a modeling career. And Robert Conrad came to Chicago to shoot a new series and cast me in the series. And I was able to step up to the plate with the knowledge that I had and the professionalism that I had. And that was the beginning of my career.
So what was it like for you going to a university that you felt was pretty much non-Black? How did that experience affect you?
Didn't affect me at all. I got a great education. I didn't accept their racism. I mean, I just considered them ignorant and went on about my life. There were only 36 Black students in my class when I entered, and it was like population of 5,000 students or something. Ooh. But okay. So they called me a name I had never been called, and I thought they were really ignorant and went on about my business. It didn't affect me. It ticked me off eventually that I didn't get the respect that I was deserving when I achieved different things, but I paid them back over the next few years.
And you say it didn't affect you, but did they call you a name that, or did they say a word, I should say?
The N-word.
Okay.
Yes.
So it was...
The young lady said that as I was trying to go into the room to which I was assigned my freshman year with my luggage. And she says, I am not rooming with no niggas.
Wow.
And I said, well, where are they?
Good response.
And then I went and asked for a room by myself.
Put her in her place. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Poor girl. She's just so uninformed. I had not experienced that in New York City, but when I got to Chicago, that's in Evanston, that's the way they were acting in the '60s. So,
So after your first appearances on TV in an acting capacity on Duke, what was next for you and how did that go?
I moved out to Los Angeles from Chicago, and Robert Conrad was out there doing another show called The Coach of the Year or A Man Called Sloan. And he just kept hiring me and I was able to get an agent. Good. And I was in LA at a time where they were looking for somebody like me to pepper up their television screens. So I just constantly worked. I did Hill Street Blues and A-Team and all sorts of little TV shows back then. It was fun. I had a great time.
The A-Team is a classic, iconic show. It used to be on Saturday evenings over here and everyone. Big show. Did you enjoy doing that show in particular? Is there any story you can tell us about you had in that show?
Oh, there were a couple of stories. One episode I did with them, I had to carry a monkey around on my hip most of the time. And the monkey was always pulling at my hair. So it was annoying, but I got through the episode. And another time I was supposed to kiss Mr. T. And he was very afraid of me having to kiss him.
Why?
So I told him to relax and I kissed him on his forehead. And that was that. Then he could relax. He was not for kissing me, which is fine.
Okay. That's interesting. Two stories from the 18. Thank you. I thought he'd be up for it, but I've never met him. I don't know. I just assumed that would be the case.
No, he was very shy.
But in terms of film and television, you don't always appear in front of the camera. You were once a part of a studio that you created with your husband, as far as I'm aware.
We had been working for years in Los Angeles and he was creating his own projects. And we moved to Virginia and he decided that Virginia needed a studio where he could do his projects. So we built one.
Nice.
Okay. So, yeah, it was difficult, but it was successful for a few years and we could not get the legislature to understand tax credits. So a lot of our clients went to other states where they could get tax credits.
So building a studio and getting productions out is very, very hard. I imagine it may be a bit harder when you're considering doing that for African-American stories or Black stories, whatever you want to call it. What type of challenges were there for building your own studio?
We had partners who were not Black. We had clients who were not Black. We built a studio for use by the community. It was the first one in the state of Virginia, and it was the first one built by Black people since the 40s. There had been Black studios before, but we were not considering ourselves a Black studio. We were a film studio, a full service film studio available to anybody who wanted to work there. And we had lots and lots of variety of things going on, but we also made our own films and we did a television series there for Showtime called Lynx with Pam Grier starring in it. We did a lot of good work there, but finding financing is the difficult part. Mm. And we were not very successful at doing that after a while. So we said, enough. We'll pare down. We sold the studio.
That's fair. Yep. After such success and everything, I can see why you would think without the financing, it can become a huge problem. I watched some of Lynx on the YouTube and I really, really found it quite exciting because I recognized so many members of the cast straight away. I was like, wow, this is great. And I love the ideas behind it because I hadn't quite seen anything like that before.
Yeah, we do a lot of things that people have never seen before and they're either totally shocked or totally embraced.
So traveling is a large part of you, it sounds like, and it helps you create. When you take your camera out with you and you go traveling and take some beautiful photos and everything, how does that type of life as a creative compare to life as an actress?
I have so many interests that I love to pursue that being an actress, you have to wait to be chosen.
Yeah.
You have to wait to be picked to be on a show, unless you're creating your own shows. I don't create shows, so I have to wait to be chosen. And in the meantime, there are a lot of things I love to do. So I do them. Great. And sometimes acting gets in the way.
Oh, okay.
Or photography gets in the way of acting, or sewing gets in the way of photography. I've got a lot of different interests and love to spend the time to explore how I can manifest through these gifts that I've been given.
So out of these gifts, if you're in a situation where you have to choose sewing or photography, which would you prefer to normally go to?
Fun! We have a ball. It's a wonderful life of interpersonal relationships and finding ways to express ideas. It's great.
So was it an 8-hour day on set 5 days a week?
Sometimes, no. No, you go in on Monday for maybe 2 hours. You read the script and you tell the writers how to fix it. And then you go home. Then Tuesday, you kind of walk around and say, okay, we're going to do that. And we're going to start here. And we're going to end there. And then we sit around and we chat a little while. And then about 4 o'clock, we go home. And then on Wednesday, we come back and we should have some of the lines down by then. But we go through wardrobe and we decide what we're going to wear and what we're going to do. And then on Thursday, we have kind of like a run through. And it's got to know where you're going and you got to hit your marks. And they've got to decide where the cameras are going to pick up what lines and things like that. So that's a prescribed day. And then Friday, we come in and we have a little bit of fun. We get all dressed and then we shoot the show straight through. And we stop and we have dinner and then we shoot the show live in front of the audience.
Oh, nice one. So it does sound like fun and exciting time.
Oh, it is. It's great. Don't let anybody ever tell you it's not a great thing to do. It's fun.
Good, good. That sounds brilliant. Having those moments to have fun while working in what you want to do.
Always find joy in the work that you do.
And when you're around the table on Mondays, when you were around the table on Mondays, it sounds like it's pretty collaborative in that way. If you're saying to the writers, this doesn't work, and maybe this idea would work. Were those discussions always fun as well? And how did the writers take it if sometimes they felt their ideas were being rejected?
Oh, their ideas aren't being rejected, they're being massaged. No, we don't confront them. We just say, what if so-and-so said this and that instead of that? Oh, okay, yeah, that works. Yeah, it's not a challenge, it's just a collaborative effort.
Oh, good, good. And did you have a lot of say in how your character would be developed and what you wanted to do with the character?
No, not really. Some lines, for example, at one show, they were going to have little Ashley Banks back talk her father. And Miss Ashley wouldn't have any teeth if she talked to her father like that. Maybe in your home, they do that. Yeah. But no, that doesn't work for us. Okay.
I see.
Cultural
references
needed to be a little tweaked.
I see. That's more than understandable. I get what you mean there. So with the characters themselves, you've recently had a reunion on television that we saw over here in the UK, and I imagine all over the world people saw it. Being away from that set for that long, when you all came back, was it instantly a fun, engaging moment being on a replica set that just looked amazing?
The set wasn't quite full scale, but this was the first occasion where we have all been together at the same time in the same place. So it was definitely a family reunion. We have been very connected since the show's ending. We've been through weddings, we've been through births of babies, we've been through funerals, sadly, and we have always remained a very tight-knit group. And okay, it was grand coming together and hearing stories that we had not heard.
Yeah.
And sharing thoughts that we had had back then and how we interpreted it. And it was just amazing to me that the show has become so iconic. While we were shooting it, there was no social media. So you didn't have the reaction from the audience that you have now instantaneously. So we were all just working and having fun on a great show. And then the show was over because Will said, this is the last year we're going to do this. And we said, okay. And then we all went off and had our lives. We had no idea that three generations later, children are walking up to us saying, Aunt Viv, who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew?
That is something special for sure, isn't it?
It is. It's such an honor to be associated with something that you're very proud of.
And when you got the opportunity again to be on, well, it's not the opportunity again, but the opportunity to be on Bel Air, this remade reversion, it kind of blows my mind when I see Carlton in it now. I'm just like, wow, this modern Carlton is, you know, I wouldn't want to stand in his way, that's for sure.
No.
What was that like, being in that position to be in that show?
That was great. I had seen the show and the characters were so well crafted and the actors are so good. And the shooting, it's so cinematic. It's just so beautifully done. And when Will asked, he said, I want to surprise the cast by having some of you OGs come and be on the show. I said, oh, that sounds like fun. And they made it happen. It was a joy. It was an honor to be asked to be a part of that and to feel the respect that cast had for our work back then and how they want to carry on the legacy of having a good show.
And how do you feel about the different version of the show?
I think it's brilliantly done. I'm proud of the creators and all the people behind the scenes because it is a multiracial, young, vibrant group of people who are putting out good work. And that's all I look for in a television show, is honesty and good work. I don't want people just passing through and just, hey. They are committed to creating an environment and to show us a 360 degree look at each one of these characters, which we did not have time to do in a half hour sitcom. We had to deal with the situation and how we each had a different way of coming at that situation. And that was well defined, but it wasn't character defining. It was reaction defining.
That's a great way to put it. And when you were on the new version of the show, seeing someone else play Aunt Viv, I mean, what was that experience like?
Oh, she's a dream. She's just so wonderful. And she was so tickled when she first met me that she just started laughing and crying and hugging me. And I just thought it was so sweet. So, I really, really like her performance and the way she carries herself. I love the way she carries herself. So I told her, you are now Aunt Viv 3.0.
3.0, I like that. That's great. It's a great way to put it. And in terms of television, which you're so well renowned for, have you got anything in the pipeline? I don't know why. When I heard you mention it, I think I did. I could have got my notes wrong again, so forgive me if I have. You mentioned This Is Us.
I love that show.
Yes, that's the show. I mean, a show like that, what I'm getting to is a Do you have shows that you love and that you're inspired by, like This Is Us?
Yeah, it's a great show. I don't usually get inspired by television. My inspiration comes more from real life than from the depicted life. I try to be present and get my inspiration from what is happening around me and to me now, rather than reaching back and hoping for the past or reaching toward the future, which nobody can predict. So my inspiration mostly comes from my gut and from what I see around me in the present.
And your book, Grace, Soul, and Motherwit.
Yes.
Tell us about that, because you've written some books, and I'm interested to know about this one.
I have been collecting recipes from people that I've worked with, from family members, from different places that I've been, and I've done it for 40 years. And sometimes I share these recipes in a little Christmas gift with people when I had time to cook.
Yeah.
And eventually my girlfriend said, when are you going to get that cookbook off of your computer? I'm going, oh, yeah. So when I get a point of view, and I finally decided that my point of view was going to be a mini memoir. So I did a mini memoir, and I decided that there are so many people, and it was during the beginning of the pandemic that I finally got to deciding to publish this book. And I was thinking that people are now coming together at home and not going to restaurants because of the pandemic. So let's encourage them to pay attention to that sense of communion that you get when you sit around a table and when you are fed with people who create food out of love of whatever the situation is. And that's what I tried to express in this book and teach people how to set up a kitchen, how to do a menu, what to keep in the pantry, what to keep in the refrigerator, so that you always have things that you can throw together at the last minute if you need to. But also each recipe that I have included in the book has a story with it of what that recipe meant to me, who the person was that I got the recipe from, what the occasion was, what the tradition is with this recipe. And it's a wonderful way to share growing up around so many wonderful people and sharing what they shared with everybody that I get to share with now.
Amazing. And what type of recipes are we talking about?
Anything you can think of.
Okay.
They're very varied, extremely varied.
You love the history of art and the makers of art and crafts. What type of artists do you love?
I like a lot of makers. I'm wearing now a pin from a maker. Woo-hoo-hoo. Somebody I found in the museum, and it's all beads. And I just think it's clever as heck. But my focus in my photography on the makers is on doors. And I like the craftsmanship, and I like what nature has done to a door. And I like textures and colors, and I'm drawn to the details of architecture. So that's what I choose to photograph, that and flowers and landscape kind of things. So I grab a shot of something that catches my eye. I only take one picture of a door. I don't light it. I let God light it. Take one shot, that's it. And I want you to see what I saw in that door at that moment. So that's the books that I created. The first four books that I published were pictures of these doors, and two of the books have journaling with them and talking about the experience of the travel. One is totally about Cuba. I did the whole west side of Cuba, the Cuban island, on a photographic tour once. And there's a book totally dedicated to that and the people of Cuba who create art from nothing and the amazing hospitality of the Cuban people and the colors and the vibrancy of life there. And then I have a couple of books that are basically just catalogs. The Belgium book and the France book are just catalogs of doors that caught my eye. And I wanted to share, and I want to encourage people to look at the details of their life and to pay attention to the details, because it's what makes the journey through life very rich. If you just go from A to B and just concentrate on getting to B, you miss a rich portion of the depth of the life that is part of that journey. And the journey is the joy. You get to point B and you've got to start a new journey again. So you might as well get the most out of the journey and not just the end point.
Very true. Very true. But what is it about doors that you like in particular?
I think they're a metaphor for life. They represent opportunity and adventure and curiosity and craftsmanship. And it's the entrance to the life that you live, whether it's the door of your house or it's the door of opportunity to the next position that you take.
I see. Very interesting. And people can look at your website and find so much more about you, that's for sure. But I really want to know before we go, creatively, what can we expect from you next?
I've got a show coming on next week on BET Plus called Trophy Wife, a nice little movie that I did last summer. And I've got a series called The Business of Christmas. We're getting ready to shoot number 3. They come out once a year around Christmas time. Wow. And that's been a lovely series with a family that I've now traveled through twice. We're going to get that family back together again and do some more traveling. And I just shot an episode of Fantasy Island, the new Fantasy Island that's on Fox television. So that was a lovely experience in Puerto Rico.
Oh, Fantasy Island. Okay. What was that experience like for you?
Because that's it was a blast. It was fun. It was working with two other women that I know. And we just had a jaunt. It was great. I had a lot of fun.
Glad to hear it. It sounds like you always have a lot of fun. 110% out of life.
I try.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. And please do hit that subscribe button, leave a rating, or comment on the show. All of which can be done on Apple Podcasts.